You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clement Magnatella
on 702.
Let's walk the talk on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Seven minutes after 9 o'clock. Dumelang, welcome to the show. Happy Friday. How are you doing this Friday morning? Are you ready for the weekend? I'm really excited today because when I knock off at 12, when I say bye-bye, I will officially be on leave. I'm taking a break for 2 weeks. A very well-deserved, much-needed break, shall I add. So I'll be back on the 20th of August. And yes, I will miss you terribly. So let's make this show count, yeah? 011-883-0702. That's where you can call me to raise any issue on the 702 open line. What do you want us to discuss this morning? It's your hour. You can send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. The SMS line is 31702.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Tabiso in Pretoria. Good morning.
Hello.
Itzada.
Hello, Clement. How are you?
Hi, Kim Nat. How are you?
I'm good. They just said services from Pretoria, although I normally prefer from Polokwane, but that's fine.
Oh, Tabiso, Polokwane. So where did you guys get Pretoria from? Also, Tabiso, where have you been? You haven't called in like 2 months.
You know, I took a break, but you need to take a break.
Okay, welcome back.
Just observe others. Yeah, no, thanks very much. You see, Clement, one of the things that we ought to and ask ourselves is that, I mean, I was watching news yesterday when communities were complaining that we've been reporting this particular issues of Zamas, there's been incidents of rape that has been reported and the police are not interested. Then we need to go back and ask ourselves, why on how on earth that could happen. And then goes back, I mean, I watched Carte Blanche on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think they were dealing with one story of Kylie Chef, if I'm not mistaken, where the criminal interviewed said, no, but those guys don't earn enough. They even go to an extent of selling us guns.
Mm.
So that goes back to say the major issue that is fueling crime in this particular country, among other things that we can debate about, is police corruption. The corruption that is there is the one that is highly fueling that particular crime. I mean, Clement, there are stories that we hear that the recruitment process is corrupted, wherein people have to pay a particular amount of money to become police. And what do you expect later when they are police? Is it not something that at some point we ought to look at it and look from recruitment up until someone is at a station? Because we're not going to go anywhere. We're going to find the situation that's the reaction of what we've seen yesterday. I mean, if you watch if you were to watch the scenes yesterday, you'd realize some of these things, these guys were out in our way. I mean, taking gas in out of the shafts and all of that. You'd realize that the police are aware of all what is happening.
Yeah, they've always been aware, Tabiso. I've done so many stories about Zamazamas when I was doing a show called Crime Watch. It's still there, actually, on ENCA. And we used to go shoot at these illegal mines, and we used to tell these stories, and it's been happening for years. And yes, the energy department says we are still in a process of closing down these shafts, these illegal mines, but that process has clearly been happening very slowly because many of these mines are still operating. And it looks like these illegal miners, these Zamazamas, literally are a law unto themselves. They really are. Tabiso in Pretoria, or Polokwane, thank you so much for calling. Peter in Spreadview, hi.
Hi, Clement. Hopefully the load shedding here would not take me off quickly. Let me get to the point, Clement. Now that the Lesotho government has acknowledged the problem that are caused by their own people, okay, my take is that our head of state here, Mr. Ramaphosa, must phone the head of state of all the neighboring countries within FedEx, where our own colleagues are coming from. Okay, when the guys get convicted here in South Africa, I don't think anybody has got a doubt in terms of our judicial system. The guys must go do time in their respective countries, Clement. Okay?
Not here in South Africa.
Not in South Africa. My hometown is Fourie's Bay. I bet you some of the guys that did some mischief in Tulisutu. The guy wished not to go in prison in Tulisutu.
Mm. Yeah, it's a complicated one, because that's not how our legal process works, right? If you've committed a crime here, you've got to be tried here. If you've committed a crime, like for instance now, Bushiri is there in Malawi. You know, he can't be tried in Malawi for the crimes that he allegedly committed here. So he's got to be brought back here. So I guess it's a little complex. It's not as easy as take them back there, because they will not want to be in those countries, because they know how harsh those prisons are. But I get the broader point that you're making, Peter, in Spreadview. Thank you for calling. Look, here's what, and I want to hear more of your thoughts about how these different countries can get involved. Lesotho, if you've missed it, has now apologized to the South African government for the criminal activities of its citizens. The Prime Minister expressed regret over criminal acts committed by Basotho's in this country, even going as far as offering to foot the bill for the prosecution of those implicated. And remember, there were those videos circulating of a group of Basotho's brandishing weapons and boasting that they are about to attack. But also, most of the illegal Zamazamas are Basotho's, and the government of Lesotho acknowledges that. And I think, and you can tell me what you think, I think what Lesotho has done is commendable. And other African countries need to do the same. They need to demonstrate that they are interested in helping South Africa deal with issues around illegal immigration involving their citizens and the impact on things like that, on our health system. Remember back in 2018, the former Minister of Health, Aaron Motsoaledi, said foreign nationals are burdening the South African health system. That's very clear. So how do we fix it without those countries where these citizens are coming from being involved? I mean, we can't turn them away. The Constitution requires that you treat all patients. But we have a resources problem. In fact, there was a suggestion at some point that the embassies get involved and have, and we have the countries where the citizens are from to pay for their care here in South Africa. But are they even interested to do that? I had Naledi Pandor on this show in April, and I asked her if these countries are taking some responsibility and helping the South African government.
I don't get that impression. I wish that there was a more engaged process. You know, you would be aware that as this department and ministry and government, we've been calling, for example, for the lifting of sanctions against Zimbabwe. Not because we believe anything fantastic is happening in Zimbabwe, but because denying Zimbabwe access to resources that would grow its economy, you are making the push into South Africa a much harder burden for this country. So it is important that we do urge, both within the region, but broadly on the continent, increased attention to economic development and to the creation of opportunity for all citizens, so that people don't have this impulse to migrate to another country. Having said that, I should say to our listeners and our fellow South Africans that migration is in existence from time immemorial. And so people do move from country to country. The challenge for us is that because we're a large economy, there's a huge migration into South Africa, and we have to do more to encourage neighbors and region to develop their economies so that they can absorb more people.
Yeah. I have to ask you about Cuba. So that's what Naledi Pandor told me. It was on the 11th of April. If you missed that interview, go check it out on our website. And we were discussing the role that these countries can play, whose citizens are here. So what I'm asking is it too much to ask for? Asking these countries, these governments whose citizens are here illegally, to be part of the solution. Why can't they do what Lesotho has done? One, issue an apology. Two, offer to foot the bill, even hospital bills. And on top of that, just be part of the solution. Here's what Lesotho's Communications Minister Sam Rapapa said when I asked about the apology they sent to the South African government. And when I come back, I'm going to go back to your calls.
The heinous crime that has been noted in South Africa, and it reported that it was citizens.
Mm.
So it is, as leadership of this country, we found that it was prudent and fair to apologize to the South African government on behalf of Basotho nationals, the Basotho government.
How concerned are you, Mr. Rapapa, about some of the videos we've seen of some people who appear to be Basotho nationals who are brandishing weapons? And I don't know if you guys have seen those videos, but they've been circulating here in South Africa. Have you seen them? And how concerned are you about those?
The reason why when the Prime Minister wrote that note to the South African government, it was because that the worrying thing. How do people bandish their legal weapons? Because obviously, if they are Basotho and they are in Africa illegally, they obviously those weapons are illegal as well.
Mm.
So that's why they are going for us as the government.
So how do you then help the South African government, and so that both of you cooperate to be part of the solution to deal with not just the crime, because the police have to deal with that, but we often even see tensions in communities, but broadly speaking, there are issues around illegal immigration, and there's an impact on things like our health systems as well. How do you think you can help with the South African government to try and find solutions to some of these challenges when it comes to illegal immigration?
That is why we have what is called the bi-national cooperation, which was just signed recently between the government and the South African government, which indicates the modus operandi, the mode of operation for relations in different sectors. Like in the communications and fire sector, we have arrangements as to how we should operate. And if you just 2 weeks ago, we were sitting between the Minister of Home Affairs, I think, and local governments to have cooperating relations. However, in this particular regard, this is crime-related activities. And in Lesotho, we do have a unit which actually was established, I think it's 12 years ago, and it's called Operation Restore Hope. Among other things, it was specifically meant to handle a cooperate in relation to the crimes that are being committed both in Lesotho and South Africa. And that has been in a cooperation between police in South Africa and also the police in Lesotho. Even as recent 2 weeks ago, the South African police was in the country to handle issues of stolen vehicles that are normally stolen in South Africa, and then they end in Lesotho.
Yep. So that's Sam Rapapa. I spoke to him this morning before we went on air. He's a communications minister in Lesotho. So why are other countries not doing the same? They can't just be releasing statements when there are tensions between their citizens and locals here. We must all be part of the solution.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the Talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
Clement, South Africa has become economic pressure valve release for SADC. That's what you see here. The leaders in those countries are very quiet. They should be worried about what is actually happening here. And it's a perfect storm for them. It works for them because economically, South Africa is actually able to absorb actually pressures that are felt in those countries. That's what you see here.
Yeah, they've got to be involved. They can't just fold their arms. They've got a responsibility over their citizens, whether they're there in their home countries or in the neighboring countries. They've got responsibility, and they can't just fold their arms when the South African government says our health system is overburdened. Let's work together, try and minimize. And look, I'm not saying that you're taking away the responsibility that our government must take, because they must make sure that we don't have porous borders. They must make sure that it's not as easy as it is now to just walk into South Africa as an illegal foreigner. So they've got work to do. But we're not going to fix this if other countries whose citizens are here illegally are not helping us. And the sooner they take responsibility and they're part of the solution, the better. A message here says, "Hi, Clement, I've never heard such nonsense. Ask these countries to do something about their citizens. These foreign nationals must be deported by the SANDF, Finnish and Klar." Okay, so you must say illegal foreign nationals, right? Please be just understand that we're talking about people that are here illegally, right? We're talking about people that are often not even interested to get the right papers. And I understand the complexities of even getting the right papers. There are people who are here and have been trying to get the right papers, but they're struggling because some officials at Home Affairs want to be bribed. Just the system has not been functioning well. But we are talking here about, if for instance, as Zimbabwe, you know how many of your citizens are here, yeah? And the South African government can share with you of how many of the illegal citizens are here. Sit down with the South African government and say, how do we fix it? How do we contribute towards your fiscus? Because these foreigners that are also here illegally are using your resources. And I'm saying that's a conversation that needs to take place. Let's go to Joseph in Tshwane. Good morning.
Clement, good morning.
Sure, Joseph.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, man. Clement, I just want to weigh in on this whole issue of foreign nationals. It's a worrying issue. And then I hear your point to say that, you know, the other countries need to play their part in terms of, you know, amongst others, putting the bill for health services and so on. But my take is that, you know, our government also cannot just sit and fold their hands and hope that, you know, your Zimbabweans, your Nigerians will assume that, you know, they need their help. For me, these countries, they think, you know, everything is hunky-dory, Clement. They feel, because South Africa is complaining. If you don't complain to me that, you know, you need help, you need resources, you're facing, you know, challenges in terms of the resources, the capacity, and so on, I will fold my hand and think, no, you are okay. Mm-hmm. For me, you just have to raise up your hand and say, hey, you know what, I've got challenges when it comes to 1, 2, 3. Can you please help me? Meet me halfway. So if South Africa is not standing up, raising their hands, and then reaching out to these countries to indicate to them that, you know, we've got these challenges. Can you please meet us up? These countries will never, I'm telling you, Clement, they will never play their part.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So we must reach out. Let's not wait for them to come to us.
Not at all.
I hear you.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Joseph. Let's hope they do and they initiate that. Let's hope they initiate, because we're not going to solve this on our own, guys. We're not going to, right? And also, these countries need to also ask themselves serious questions about how they change things in their country so that they are not breeding ground for people just leaving. Nobody decides to leave their country and leave their family behind to just thought, oh, let me go to that the neighboring country and start a new life there. It's not as easy as that. People leave because of persecution. People leave because there are no financial opportunities, economic opportunities where they are. Most people at the very least. So those countries also need to think, how do we come up with a plan that retains our citizens? And unfortunately, that's a reality. When you speak to a lot of people that are even coming from Zimbabwe, they'll tell you we are here for better opportunities. And there are many of them who are here legally. But there are some who are not here legally. And unfortunately, our government and its systems are allowing that to continue. Because we don't have robust, right, systems. We don't have strict immigration laws. In fact, you could argue that our immigration laws are sufficient to deal with the issue. We just need a capable state. Huh? We just need our borders, right? Security at our borders to be strengthened. I think only recently did they announce, when did I speak to the Home Affairs Minister? Was it a month or two ago when he came into studio? Only recently did they talk about the, What's that system that they've just announced now at the border? I'll remember it just now. But basically, they've hired these guards. There's a new system that's going to ensure that it's not as easy, right, for people to just cross over or to even bribe the officials. So it strengthens our systems at the borders. Border Management Authority, that's what I'm looking for. Only now, but how long have we had this problem? So, yes, I'm not trying to say the South African government is escaping scot-free here. It must take responsibility, but equally so, as Nigeria, as Zimbabwe, as whatever country whose citizens are here overwhelmingly and many of them are here illegally, you need to take responsibility too. As an ambassador, you need to show, demonstrate you're interested in helping South Africa fix this, because they're not going to be able to do it on their own. It's 9:30.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the Talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
It's 25 minutes before 10 o'clock. I'm going to go back to your calls shortly. So I saw a post, was it yesterday, right, of someone who put up a message saying on social media that before you all, and I'm quoting here, before you all start accusing us of not sharing job opportunities, UJ is looking for a vice chancellor and then the principal. So this person, Shem, was plugging other people, right? Which is quite commendable, yeah? Another person says, before let accuse agore are sharing the job opportunities, which means before you accuse us of not sharing job opportunities, UJ is looking for a vice chancellor. You can email academics@uj.ac.za. So I saw this and I laughed. Why did I laugh? It reminded me of what happened in 2020 when the Auditor General at the time, Kimi Makwetu, passed away. So obviously, like, people had to apply, and there was a report on IOL that cashiers, interns, bus drivers were among applicants for the Auditor General post. And look, I get it that sometimes, you know, you've got people that are really desperate for the job opportunities, but I think sometimes we know at the back of our heads that I am not qualified for this post. But I'm applying anyway. So I want to ask you, if you have been in a situation in your life where you've actually applied for a post you knew at the back of your mind you didn't qualify for and you were just taking chances. I've been there. Huh? I mean, I was in first year university and I went for auditions to be a top billing presenter. There were auditions somewhere in, I don't remember. In fact, I think it was my first time coming to Joburg. I took a taxi at like 5 a.m. from Pretoria, eh? In Sunnyside. Eh? Go Bosman. You know Bosman taxi rank in Pretoria. I took a taxi and came to Joburg to come and audition to be a top billing presenter. I was so petty. I was so small. And I mean, I knew at the back of my mind, but I was like, hey, I serve a miraculous God. A God of miracles. And I've applied for a job at the Department of Environmental, is it Forestry and Fisheries? I don't remember at the time. And I had just graduated. They were looking for like a media, a communications deputy director or communications director. Clement sent his application. That time he had just graduated. Have you been there? I know some of you have. You know that job you're like, I'm going to apply anyway, and you're going to fast for 3 months. And sometimes it happens, and people do get those opportunities. And if you have, I would like to hear from you too. 011-883-0702. WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the Talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
Let's go to John in Pretoria. John. Ooh, John is putting us on hold. Let's get John ready there. In the meantime, Lunga in Pretoria on the SMS line says, hi, Clement, I'm happy to hear that most of the 702 journalists seem to have a change of heart. I personally have said that other countries in the region must take responsibility for the illegal migrants to South Africa. Many journalists have disagreed with this view for a long time. Aibo, who disagreed with this view? I'm definitely not that 702 journalist who has had a change of heart. This is a view I've had consistently. Hence, I asked the Minister of Home Affairs, Aaron Motsoaledi, sometime last year. I've even asked the Minister of International Relations when I interviewed her earlier this year about the involvement of other countries. So, yeah, I don't know of anybody, well, at least from what I know from my colleagues, who has had a change of heart.
Clement, good morning. I think on this issue of governments taking care of their nationals, it actually goes back to the whole immigration crisis. As long as the South African government does not put pressure on, especially the SADC governments, you will never fix this problem. So it's very important for these SADC governments to be involved and for South Africa to really put a lot of pressure on them, because that's the only way you can ever deal decisively with this migration crisis. Raymond Yen Fellens, thank you.
Yeah, no, you're right. We need to put that pressure. We do. And let's hope that's going to happen soon. Clement, you are calling from Pretoria. Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm all right. I hear you're a first-time caller.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller, but I've come to see the interesting subject around immigration.
Yeah, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. And what I want to say to you is that South Africa finds itself in this situation because of its docile approach in terms of its foreign policy.
Mm.
South Africa is regarded as a big brother in SADC.
Mm.
And yet Zimbabwe had a military coup in 2017, and South Africa seemed to get hands for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In 2008, Morgan Tsvangirai won elections in Zimbabwe, and he was not allowed by the Zimbabwean military to ascend into office as the president of Zimbabwe. That would have changed the fortunes of your neighbors in Zimbabwe.
True.
And I can assure you, Clement Manyathela, so if you check the history of Zimbabwe from 1980, when Zimbabwe got its independence, all the way to 1996, 97, migration was very minimum because the Zimbabwean economy was working.
Mm.
So along the way, South Africa began to benefit from its own lack of skills at that moment. And there was so much migration. Because what I want you to understand why you are going to struggle with outside the countries coming on board. Imagine if Zimbabwe has got 4 million or 3 million Zimbabweans residing in South Africa right now. The views from Harare would be that most of these people outside our borders are sympathetic to the opposition in Zimbabwe.
Mm.
This is the reason why even Zimbabweans in the diaspora are not allowed to vote.
Mm.
Next year, Zimbabwe holds a very milestone election in 2023. And tell you what, all Zimbabweans now who are in South Africa cannot vote. And Zimbabwe is the only country, if I'm not mistaken, in southern region now, which cannot even afford to, its citizens a constitutional right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are saying you're out of the country.
And what have
what is South Africa doing about it?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Clement, I absolutely agree with you. 100%. And I think the point there is that it doesn't help for us to employ quiet diplomacy. And if anything must show us that, if anything must demonstrate that, must be what's happened in Zimbabwe. We can't look the other way when there are problems in our brother, sister nations. Because ultimately, when things worsen, like they did in Zimbabwe, we bear the brunt. We bear the brunt. We've got economic migrants here. The situation worsened in the 2000s when there was an economic meltdown in Zimbabwe and the majority of people left and settled here. And there have been political developments there. And what did we do? We employed quiet diplomacy. Now we are reaping the fruits of that silence. And that, Clement, I agree with you, is where the South African government must also take responsibility. It's 18 minutes before 10.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
Thulani in Fourways. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. I don't think it was overly optimistic of you to apply for those positions.
Oh, yeah?
Even though you didn't have skills or qualifications.
Yeah.
Shawudi became a COO without an issue. So, a minute.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. Also, I mean, think about our ministers, Thulani. Yeah? I can count a few. What relevant skills and qualifications do they have to hold those powerful positions?
you can apply for a position of a DG with a grade 9.
Listen, UJ is looking for a vice chancellor, Tulani. I'm going to put my application in, man.
No, definitely. You qualify.
Tulani in Fourways, thank you. Fumani in Johannesburg, hi.
Hi, Clement. Please.
But Akiri, we serve a God who opens the doors, Fumani. And we are optimistic citizens.
Clement, I'm in the recruitment space, so I receive all of these applications from people. Otolet DSTV installer, I apply for a financial director role. Stop. You know, there are these messages on LinkedIn where people are like, guys, I want to give you a hope. I applied for a job I didn't qualify for. I got the interview and now, you know, I got the contract. Don't stop. If my God can do it, your God can do it too. No, don't do it.
The motivational speakers. Fumani is in the recruitment space. And she's like, stop. Stop. Okay, Fumani. All right. Rob, in Midrand. Hi.
Hey, how's it, Clement Mania Taylor?
I'm all right, Rob. How are you doing?
Hey, good. Thank you. So I had a reverse of that. I applied for a job and I was told I was overqualified.
Oh, yeah?
And that I would leave within 6 months because I'd be looking for something better.
Oh.
But I'd been unemployed for 6 months already. So, you know, they don't know this, but I'm a guy who believes in loyalty for a company, to a company. So I would stay on. Who knows whether I'd find another job anyway. It was quite a long time ago. So
when you explained that to them, they didn't buy it?
They didn't buy it, no. Yeah.
Askies, Rob. Are you employed now?
I'm self-employed.
Oh, okay. Is that better than being someone else's employee?
Oh, much better. You know, you're boss of your own time.
Yeah.
But I've done strange things. I mean, since then I started an irrigation business, a plumbing business.
Wow.
Maybe
that's what you needed, Rob. Business. You needed that company to say, no, you're overqualified. We can't give you this job, to like nudge you to start doing all of what you've done now.
Yeah, it did. But we still went hungry.
Yeah.
I remember friends buying groceries for us.
Sure.
And just knocking on the door and coming in with pick and pay packets of groceries. Because three little kids and we didn't have anything. And I couldn't even pay the rent and I sold my piano and, had to get rid of stuff. But we made it.
Well done, Rob. And congratulations, man, for having the courage to go out there and do it. I mean, thank you for sharing that story with us. That's Rob there in Midrand. More of your calls and WhatsApp voice notes when we come back. Have you ever applied for that post? I mean, you knew at the back of your mind you were not qualified for cashiers, bus drivers, interns were among those that applied for the Auditor General post. And if you gave them just a simple financial statement, I mean, if you gave me a financial statement, where do I even begin?
7:02 afternoons with Relebogile Mabotja, 1 to 3 p.m.
The anger and the frustration isn't necessarily just about the Zamazamas. There are other issues in the community that aren't being tended to. We're seeing it now play itself out. Cindy Le, hi.
My sister, Daniel Nkahi. And these police who are shooting now, they have not been there from the morning. They were waiting on the other side of Kahi, so next to the cemetery. I don't know why they're looking for in the cemetery, because people there are buried. They are peaceful. Now they come in here because they are not being seen on the media. Now they come there, they shoot people.
7:02 afternoons
with Relebogile Mabotja.
Let's walk the talk.
Getting a Better Bond home loan pre-approval tells you what you can buy for before you look or before you put in an offer. A Better Bond pre-approval is your key to home ownership, and it's also your chance to win. Better Bond is giving away 10,000 Rand in cash to 5 lucky winners. Simply visit betterbond.co.za and get your pre-approval certificate, and 10,000 Rand could be yours. Plus, it's 100% free, so you really can only win with Better Bond. T's and C's apply.
Feel one with the drive in the Mazda CX-5 2-liter active manual from only 5,799 per month over 72 months with a 10% deposit, linked interest at 7.97%. Total cost 616-858. Balloon payment 200-200. T's and C's apply. Finance subject to credit approval. Master Finance is a product of West Bank, a division of First Rand Bank Limited, an authorized financial services and registered credit provider.
It's the final days of the Dial-A-Bed annual sale with up to 35% off. The Sealy Celebration Queen Set is now only 8,499, say 4,500 Rand. And the 40 Winks Mega Sleep Queen Set is only 13,999, say 5,000 Rand. Plus, get 24-hour delivery on our best sellers. Don't miss the final days of SA's best bed sale. Only at Dial-A-Bed. Sleep for life.
Your voice.
Your station.
Your open line.
Walk the talk with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
12 minutes before 10 o'clock.
Hi, Clement. Paulus here. Quite a while ago, I applied for a supervisory position at Rand Waters. And, you know, shockingly, I knew very well that I was not at all qualifying for that position. But to my surprise, they gave me a call and, you know, obviously notified me that I was shortlisted and I went for an interview. You know, because I was so empty-minded, I did not know a single thing they were asking me. I was just in that interview stuck, not knowing what's going on. And just walking out of that door, I knew that obviously I wasn't even going to get the position. But it was just one of those things, you know, one saying that I'm trying something. And yeah, so that's that. But that was just quite a while ago because I was a fresh graduate and I didn't have a single experience for the position I applied for. Thanks, man. Enjoy your day. Ciao. Bye.
Clement, I always do apply for jobs that I don't qualify. You never know, hey? Maybe they'll like your personality the way you are, and they'll take you just because. So I always do.
Okay. Tavo in Pretoria East, good morning.
Good morning, Clement. So in my situation, I firmly believe in applying for roles that seemingly you're not qualified for,
yeah,
if you're currently doing other things to upskill yourself.
Yeah.
Case in point, in the industry I was in up until 7 months ago until I became self-employed, I would be told that I'm too ambitious when applying for certain roles, but my white counterparts would be told that they're being hired on future potential. So the future of this person, mm-hmm, we see that we can groom him to that. And I'm saying, how do you see as a person's future potential if currently they're not succeeding in their current position and they're not doing anything to upskill themselves? How do you then give somebody a role in that space? So I firmly believe in it because I know I can back myself, not just in an interview, in everything else that I do, I can back myself. Mm. And I believe that from a recruitment space, from company spaces, our white counterparts are always given, true, a leg up to say future, true, potential.
Mm-hmm.
You can see you can grow into a something, but Tavo, mm, must come with the experience and the qualification,
yeah,
already. You can't,
you're
be
right,
a director if you've never been a director, but he can because we see future potential.
Yeah, so the level...
There's a disparity there.
There is. It's, yeah, the playing field is not leveled there, Tabo. You're so right. You're so right. Our white counterparts, you know, in some instances have been given the opportunity. They may not have the qualification or the skills, but there's that trust, right? There's the trust and the confidence that they can do the job. But you've got to prove yourself, right? Tabo, thank you for raising that, man.
Hi, Clement. It's possible, my brother, man. It's possible. Look, myself, I applied for a position that I did not qualify for. And I got that job. I was still a student in my final year of psychology. And I applied for a position at a TVET college in a unit of student support services where they required a degree in social sciences, and I did not have a degree by then, but they still gave me a permanent job and they allowed me to finish my studies.
Thank you, Debza. Franz in Boxburg, hi.
Hi, Clement.
Hey, Tada.
Franz, about 15 years ago, I was working for a boss from hell. I was a sales rep, but had previously been a sales manager at the companies I'd worked prior to that.
Mm.
And I was so upset with this boss, applied for a couple of jobs in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
And I was shortlisted on two of them. And on both of them, I cracked the nut for a second interview.
Wow.
And I was so I was so conscious of making sure I don't create the right impression. And that's extremely difficult for me. So that it's a very interesting topic that you brought up today.
Wow.
In my case, it was a story with a happy ending. But I feel for a lot of unemployed people out there who just out of desperation apply for jobs.
No, that's
and,
true.
It can't be easy relying on getting an opportunity, applying for a job you know nothing about.
Yes, that's true, Franz. And like I said, some people are doing this because they're really desperate. And they're like, I'm just going to shoot my shot everywhere and hope for the better. But I think even when you shoot that shot, you know at the back of your mind that I don't qualify here. And sometimes you know that, my goodness, should I get this job? Where do I even begin? Dorozo in Four Ways, what's your experience? Hi.
Hi, Clement. So I run an analytics business, right? So we were looking for a very specific skill, and which is kind of hard to find. And then we're interviewing a lot of people and we just can't find someone. And then we finally met this guy who, in the interview, seemed like he knew what he was doing. So we gave him the job. We placed this guy at a client. Does he not drop the ball? I mean, so there are people who literally, I mean, we looked at his CV and we're like, okay, cool. I mean, his CV was convincing. He comes to the interview, the guy's convincing. But I mean, now that we fired him, I mean, we're looking at it now and we're like, yeah, I think maybe at some point we were kind of desperate to sort of get someone for the project.
Yeah.
And then we realized, you know, now when I guess the I don't know, stress levels were down, we were just like, no, man.
Yeah.
This man doesn't know what he's doing, this guy.
Hey.
I mean, literally, like, and he wasn't cheap either. I mean, this homie was getting paid more than me, and I ran the business. I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I get upset crazy every time because obviously we've got a contract with this guy now. Eventually, about 3 months in, we set him down and he said, look, you've dropped the ball so many times.
Mm.
And we fired him with immediate effect. I hope he's listening.
Oh, no.
I never want to see him again.
Oh, shame. Oh, yeah. And thank you for calling Doors in Four Ways. One of the things I fear the most is just under-delivering. That's my biggest fear. So, I mean, in my life, I've been offered things that I knew I'm not able to do, right? Because sometimes people just think, oh, you work on the radio, you work on the television, and then now they're, you know, you're a jack of all trades. But you also need the maturity to say no, right? And I remember there was a time when, before I even started working on TV, I was offered a thing to read primetime news on television, and I had just been working on weekends. And I remember saying no to that because I just felt I'm not ready for that. Like, I'm going to get there and I'm under-delivering and, you know. So I didn't want that at all. So do you sometimes have that feeling of, I'm being offered this great opportunity with these great rewards, but I'm not taking it because I just don't think I'm ready? Have you ever said no to that kind of an opportunity? It's big. It's what you are wishing and hoping for, but you also understand that you're not ready for it. Huh? JK, you're calling from Pretoria. You're also a first-time caller. Good morning. Welcome.
Come on, a quick one. I was a driver for 2 months for a big company at that time. And then I was, I accidentally applied for a position which was a supervisor position. And I was accepted, Clement. I was taken to an office. I was this young guy, vibrant guy, and I never looked back, Clement. From there, I needed more. And then the next year, I didn't even stay a year there. Next year, I was applying for another position in head office. I got accepted all the way. And now, Clement, I'm an operations manager.
Wow.
So we have to believe in ourselves. Clement, I can tell you, I never had qualification that time.
Yeah.
And I just secured my qualification last year.
Wow.
COVID, I could able to study online and all the stuff.
Mm.
I never had a qualification. I was accepted on all the roles that I was applying to.
Oh, well done, JK. That's incredible.
It's because of the skill and a positive mindset that you set on your mind.
Mm.
And guess what, Clement?
Mm.
I've won an COO award last year.
Wow, congratulations. Wow, I wanna clap for you, JK. That's incredible. And I'm glad because you didn't just rely on, yeah, I've got the skills, but you said, let me go and supplement it. with a qualification, you still took time to go and study. Congratulations to you, JK. Well done, man. Well done. Then thank you for calling. Tebogoen Houghton says, hi, Clement. I heard that HR lady complaining about CVs. HR must just continue with the work of screening. South Africa is full of possibilities. Keep applying, everybody. You never know. That's Tebogoen in the Houghton estate. Ah, thank you so much for making me laugh. Yeah, this is a lovely, lovely open line. By the way, before I end the show, because this is my last day before I take the 2-week break, I'm going to have a surprise for you before we wrap up the show. So keep listening, especially at 11:45. It's 2 minutes before 10.